Okay, so great to learn with you all. We're going to talk about some issues about mental health and food. We're going to do three questions, all related to food. Jews are very into food. Hopefully we're a little bit into mental health as well. We're going to talk about feeding someone with Alzheimer's disease on Yom Kippur. We're touching some issues about that issue. We're going to talk about eating disorders in general on Yom Kippur. And we're going to talk about if you have to institutionalize someone at a non-kosher facility. So we're going to do those. Those are the three topics. And we'll touch on a lot of other sub-issues. So let's talk about, Alzheimer's disease is a progressive brain disorder that gradually destroys memory, thinking ability, and the capacity to carry out everyday tasks. It's the most common cause of dementia. And the question I sort of want to go through is someone suffering from Alzheimer's obligated to fast at Yom Kippur? And also, can we feed such a person? Now, in early stages, there's mild memory loss and relatively minor interference in daily life. But in the advanced stages, the person is disconnected from reality or there's a steep decline in cognition. So how do we sort of look at this person? So the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, obviously these are very serious issues. Very difficult issues emotionally for people taking care of someone. We want to see how does halacha have to deal with this. So the first source I have, the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Ches, describes that a shota, some of this is review from the last session, that a shota is someone, he's sort of in the same category as someone who's a cheresh and a katan, someone who's a deaf mute, someone who's a child. A shota is someone who lacks mental capacity. He's not obligated in mitzvot, it seems. He cannot fulfill the mitzvah for other people. The Gemara in Chagiga Gimel and Bey says, what's the definition of a shota? Someone who's legally incompetent. So we had the Gemara in Chagiga describe someone who goes out at night alone, someone who sleeps in the cemetery, someone who rips his clothing. And there's a whole debate. Is this, he has to do all three things, he does only one thing. And the Rambam, they just bring you just a smattering of sources. The Rambam in Hechos Eidos, Perek Tes, Halacha Tes, says that someone who is lacking mental capacity, he can't be a witness because he's not ben mitzvos. He is exempt from mitzvos. And he says that what is a shota? And this is in source 3, the Rambam in Hechos Eidos, Perek Tes, Halacha Tes. He says, anyone whose mind has been disordered and whose thinking is consistently impaired in some manner, even though he speaks and asks questions appropriately in other matters, such a person is disqualified and is considered among the category of shota. And a shota, also source 4, is a shota is not even called up to the Torah. But a shota is someone who's lacking mental capacity. He's not chayav, he's not obligated in mitzvos. So is a child obligated to eat on Yom Kippur? To fast in Yom Kippur? What's it do with a child? A child who's lacking mental capacity. So in source 5 in Hilchos Yom Kippur, Simon Tafresh Tes Zayin Sif Bei says that a child, we educate him according to hours. Meaning, by the time he's 9 or 10 years old, if he eats 2 hours in the day, we have him eat 3 hours a day. You should remember what Yom Kippur is, but he should be fasting. He shouldn't be fasting when he's a young child. We train him to eat a little more, a little more, a little more. However, this is important halacha, in Mishnah Berurah, in Source 6, Simon, Tuf, Reish, Tes, Zayin, Sif, Katan, Hey, he says, the Magen Avraham says that you're not allowed to feed him. You're not allowed to feed the child who's 9 or 10 years old. Meaning that maybe a child is allowed to eat, but you can't feed the child food on Yom Kippur. Why? Just like you can't feed a child non-kosher food. So let's think about this for a second. Right? In other words, if a child, let's say a young child, eats non-kosher food, let's say before he's at the age where he's obligated mitzvos, So if three, four-year-old, I don't know, eats non-kosher food, he's a young child. He's exempt from mitzvos. He doesn't know one way or the other. But you can sort of imagine how you don't know how to feed it to him, right? In other words, maybe the child can do it. Now, how might Yom Kippur, though, be different? Is Yom Kippur the same or Yom Kippur is different? Right? In other words, is Yom Kippur this... In other words, if a child is not obligated to fast on Yom Kippur, so the question is, are you allowed to feed him? Is there a difference between the child being obligated and you feeding him? Should there be a difference or not? Well, let's first do with a young child. Let's first do a young child. A young child, let's say... So you're obligated to feed him, right? Okay, so you're saying, but let's say 9 or 10 years old. Why can't you feed him?
Because they're old enough to make these decisions themselves.
Right, now the question, are you allowed to feed a child, a young child? Let's say a young child wants to eat non-kosher food. So maybe the child himself is not chayv in mitzvos yet, but maybe there's an issue about you feeding the child. Because it seems the Magen Avraham says that let's say a kid wants to eat non-kosher food, okay, that's his issue. Young child, maybe the parents have obligation of chinuch, but let's say you see a kid on the street, he wants some non-kosher food. So he's a young child, I don't know, he's 5, 6, 7, whatever the case is. Can you just give him the non-kosher food? So the halacha is you're not allowed to feed someone, even a katan, non-kosher food. So the Mishnah Brewer says, he says, well, wait a second. If you look in source 7, he says that maybe that only applies to a full prohibition. He says, or maybe 11 or 12-year-olds who may have to fast a little bit. What he's saying is the following. When it comes to food that's not kosher, so you're never allowed to, you can't feed a child that. But maybe a child who's 11 or 12 who has to fast rabbinically, maybe then you can't feed him. But someone under than that, let's say a kid who's 7, 8, 9 years old, and maybe instead of eating at 2 o'clock, he's eating at 2 hours a day instead of 3 hours in the day. So you can say that maybe there's a difference between forbidden food, what some people like to call the chetzah, the food itself is forbidden. So then you can't feed it to him. But if we're just educating a child, there's no prohibition for a parent to feed a child. That's what he wants to say. He says, "Va'adraba halo mechuyev la'achil la'achar gimel shows al kopanim." That you're obligated to feed a child after 3 hours. Okay, maybe normally you feed him at 8 a.m. You're feeding him at 9 a.m. So there's no isser. It's just really training him. When there's no mitzvah of chinuch for other people. There's no prohibition to. I'm not allowed to feed my child treif, even though, is he chayv and treif and food or not kosher food, not kosher food? That's an isser gomer. That's a real prohibition. This notion of when the kid's 9 years old to maybe have him, try to start getting him not to eat for an hour or so. But there's no real prohibition for me to feed him. It's not a real isser. It's just sort of training the child. So the question then is, do you think, let's say someone who has Alzheimer's. So someone who has Alzheimer's, is he obligated to fast? Let's assume he's doesn't have mental capacity. So he's exempt from mitzvahs. I don't know if you think of it that way. I'm sure many of you might think that someone who has Alzheimer's, the reason why you should feed him is because what? What would you say the reason would be? Okay, so or why else might you be obligated to feed him?
For health.
For health, right. So I think, it's interesting you're saying that, Myrna. I would say that right, someone who has Alzheimer's, they may not know how to take care of themselves. So if you don't feed him, if you don't take care of him, no one's going to take care of him, and there might be a life-threatening situation, right? Potentially, you can imagine a situation where maybe it's not life-threatening, right? But maybe he's just like a child is not obligated to fast. Maybe someone who has Alzheimer's is not. Does not have mental capacity. We don't think of it like that, but he doesn't have. He's not chayv in mitzvos. A child obviously will hopefully become chayv. Advanced stage of Alzheimer's, right? Where there's no mental cognition, right? So let's say he fits in the category of shelter. Someone advanced, he's disoriented. He doesn't really have. He is disconnected from reality. A steep decline in cognition, but theoretically they could fast, Let's say it's right. So you could take the pikuach nefesh angle, but you could also say that the person has no mental capacity, so therefore he's exempt from feeding, from eating. The question is, are you allowed to feed him?
Yeah.
Right.
In the process, that would be counterintuitive.
Oh, you shouldn't feed him because it might be harmful to you.
Yes.
Well, what do you do? What do you do every other day of the year?
No, you feed them every other day. You should feed them. Right. You should feed them. You're feeding them every day. Now comes a day where you're not feeding them, and they're going to get.
They get angry. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, so you're saying, therefore, it could. Yes. He might get upset at you.
And physically dangerous.
Oh, say right. So right, 100%. So right. So one angle you can say. Is that it is, what you can look at this whole question and simply say, it's dangerous, therefore you would have to feed him. Question is, can you create a scenario, I don't know if you've ever dealt with family members who have Alzheimer's, is it always a dangerous situation? Or I mean, do we just assume, okay, they're Alzheimer's, so you can feed them. I think our inclination is, the person's not doing well, so we're just gonna feed him.
So there's gonna be an aftermath.
Yeah. Right.
Versus the danger, because if it's a danger,
right.
Then there may be some situations yes and some situations
right.
No.
Right. Or I would say I might say the opposite. I might say if it's dangerous, then I have to feed him. If I think it's dangerous, then I'm going to feed him. If he's not obligated, but maybe just like a child who's not obligated, you're not allowed to feed the kid non-kosher. Does that apply to Yom Kippur or not? Right. So I just want to point out, at the end of the day, it seems that most poskim seem to say that you do feed him. Let's just sort of see the argument here. If you look here at source 8, we'll just read the English. This is Rav Zilberstein. He cites the Shulchan Aruch and he says, if a minor eats forbidden foods, the court is not commanded to separate him, but to feed him by hand, it's forbidden. Even with, you're not allowed to feed someone non-kosher food, even someone who doesn't have to keep the mitzvahs, a young child. The Mishnah Berurah writes that this prohibition applies to every person, and that this is a biblical prohibition. He brings a pasuk. You shall not eat, like the pasuk says, when it comes to feeding a child non-kosher food, it says lo tachilum, and it means lo tochlum, and they interpret it as lo tachilum, lo tochal dam. So the rabbis understand there's a tradition that says you're not allowed to feed food even to young children. Even to children who are not obligated. There's something like wrong about feeding non-kosher food to children, even if they're not obligated in mitzvos. Okay? And from these three mitzvos, we learned to the entire Torah that all Torah prohibitions may not be felt to minors, nor may they be instructed to transgress. There is room to question the law regarding someone who's mentally incompetent. Are you permitted to feed him, right? Do you view it as a child that you can't feed him, or maybe it's different? So he says, if you look at the next section, he says, eating on Yom Kippur is not comparable to other Torah prohibitions. In other prohibitions, the object itself is an item of prohibition with the status of impurity attached to it. We believe that somehow, like non-kosher food, has this kind of status of impurity. We're going to get to it, rather, the Chassam Sofer. Spoiler alert, the Chassam Sofer, when he talks about putting someone in an institution to help them, where they can serve non-kosher food, he's very uncomfortable with feeding someone non-kosher food, even if technically it might be, you get around the technical halach prohibitions, there's something impure about eating non-kosher food. You know that medrash about Moshe Rabbeinu when he nursed from Miriam, or whatever, not from Miriam, from Yocheved, because to nurse someone non-kosher, it's an issue. Like, there's something about like eating non-kosher food, which is impure. So even if a child's not obligated in the mitzvah of kashrus, still feeding him non-kosher is a problem. However, that's different than Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, the food is permitted. The prohibition is on the person. So since minors are not commanded to fast, then you're allowed to feed them permitted food. This is a debate whether you can feed children food on Yom Kippur. And then he says, and he also says that feeding children on Yom Kippur is also a mitzvah to feed a kid because of pikuach nefesh. So based on this, in practice, you look at the bottom source line, Rav Eliyahu, this is from this book, Sefer Nafshi B'Sheila Sefer, Vilni Rodenzweig, says in practice, Rav Eliyahu Schlesinger permits feeding someone with Alzheimer's who at least appears to have no das, no mental capacity. He combines the opinion that allows actively feeding a minor with the one that does not equate the shota with the minor. Okay, so then he says, then he adds, even if such person is declared physically fit to fast, because some people with Alzheimer's may be physically fit, they can fast. Even if they're fit to fast, the fast will undoubtedly weaken them greatly, and there's a real chance that their illness will get worse. So he throws in the pikuach nefesh argument. Rav Schlesinger asked Dr. Abraham for his opinion on his ruling, and he reportedly added the following: it would be sufficient for someone to drink enough shiurim so that they receive 2 liters of liquid over the course of the day, in addition to what they will drink after Yom Kippur is over. So Dr. Abraham thought that you should just you could just give the person liquids, and that's it. You know, it's bishiurim. They said just feed the person 2 liters of liquid, and that would be enough. But you can't just keep on feeding him. But Moshe Sternbach also rules that one should feed a patient for 2 reasons. The other, absence of das, means there is no prohibition to feed them Yom Kippur, and their inability to clearly communicate any health problems makes it safek pikuach nefesh. So he throws in something else. In other words, theoretically, you could make the argument that someone who has no mental capacity, they are exempt, but you can't feed them. But the fact they have no mental capacity means they may not be able to communicate if they are in a pikuach nefesh circumstance. So we're sort of broadening the definition of pikuach nefesh. This seems to be the opinion of Rav Yisrael Zilberstein. Rav Neuwirth is lenient. He brings one opinion that's stringent, but it seems that the stringent opinion should not be followed. So bottom line to this question, the first question is, can you feed someone with Alzheimer's? So again, if it's pikuach nefesh, then of course it's permitted. If it's not clearly pikuach nefesh, so then you probably will have a lone view that might say that if the person is seems that they could fast. So again, the person himself is not chayv in mitzvos, but you shouldn't, just like you can't feed someone non-kosher food, you should also not feed them on Yom Kippur. You can respond to that in one of two ways. You can respond to that and say, no, some hold that this only applies to non-kosher foods. When it comes to Yom Kippur, there's no prohibition to feed someone who's not obligated to fast on Yom Kippur, because only treif, that can make the soul impure, quote unquote. That's the prohibition to feed someone. But to feed someone who's not obligated Yom Kippur kosher food, there's no problem. So you can use that analysis to say that it's permitted to feed someone with Alzheimer's on Yom Kippur. And you can also take a broader definition of pikuach nefesh, that since the person doesn't have mental capacity, then the person may not be able to tell you when they're in a dangerous situation and therefore would be permitted to feed them. That seems to be the dominant view for either of these 2 reasons. Okay, that's how you would look at someone with Alzheimer's. Okay. Second question, which is eating disorders, Yom Kippur. Yeah.
What about the mental anguish of the person who doesn't know what's going on?
Right.
You are forcing him
to not eat.
Right.
So that again. So if a competent doctor would tell me that might trigger a potential pikuach nefesh situation, we're very lenient when it comes to these things. So if it can trigger a pikuach nefesh situation, so then because the person's anguish, you have these cases where on Shabbos, can you flip on a switch for someone who is a life-threatening situation? Because that will calm them down, so they won't have all this mental anguish. If you really feel that will calm the person down, so then these things are permitted. So I would say, yeah, if the doctor, responsible doctor, feels that it could lead to a dangerous situation because they're so much anguish, so then yeah, it would be permitted to feed them. But then you have to, and again, even in a suffix case, even a doubtful case, then you would be allowed to do that. If the doctor is sure, again, I don't know, depending on the person, that the person's healthy and they're not so responsive and they're not going to be full of anguish either way, then you're running into the question.
So the thing is that if there is no cause of effort, you are allowed to force a person to fast, even though the person has no understanding.
You're allowed to... No, I would say the opposite. No, I would say the opposite. If there's no pikuach nefesh, then maybe. No, then maybe. I'm not saying for sure. You still have an argument. Most posts would say you could still feed him in either case. What I'm telling you is if you could take either a broad definition of pikuach nefesh, in which case it would totally be allowed. And even if it's not that, so it depends on this question of whether there's only a prohibition to feed someone non-kosher food, or whether that prohibition extends to feeding someone kosher food on Yom Kippur. That's a separate machlokas, and I think there are those who are leaning even in that direction. I think most people will probably generally be leaning to this, but I'm trying to give you the two ways to look at it.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
You're not going to make a party out of it.
Right.
And that's it. You have your sandwich, you finish
right.
it. They know something, it's a different kind of a day.
Right.
I mean, in the same way, the person with Alzheimer's cognitively is on a different level of cognition, just as a child.
Right.
But it may be differently, but still, right. his cognition is that not an adult.
Right.
So therefore, maybe you feed him when you feed him. It's kosher food.
Right. But I guess the question might be, I mean, I'm agreeing with you at the end of the day, that's what we hold up. Those who are stringent, this Rav, the Mishnah Yosef, what he would say, with a child, if you don't feed the four or five-year-old, it's potentially pikuach nefesh, not to feed the child for the whole day, as opposed to if a competent doctor would say that, you know, an elderly person, you know, he can fast. Just like many older people can fast. Some people have Alzheimer's, some people don't have Alzheimer's. Many people can fast the whole day. The question in that scenario, whether you should do it. That might be the difference. Again, I think that most, the predominant authorities say that you can. The only argument say you can if we equate this to a situation, again, at 4 or 5, no one feeds it, someone may need to feed the child. It could be a child who's a little bit older. What the Magen Avraham might say is you could tell him where the food is, but actually you can't actively give him the food. I mean, this might be like a little form over substance, but there are these halachic prohibitions of being directly responsible. Now, how direct is direct? We can discuss that. But certainly, you know, a child, if he knows where the food is in the pantry, he knows where the candy is, right? So he's gonna go for it, right? Someone who's Alzheimer's may not know. And that's an interesting question, right? So, okay, so next question is, what about someone who has eating disorders in Yom Kippur? So anorexia is a serious eating disorder and it's a mental health condition in which a person has an intense fear of gaining weight and a distorted perception of their body, leading them to severely restrict food intake. So what's clear is that we know that a chola, and the Shulchan Aruch in Or HaChaim, Siman Tafrei Shidches, Sif Alav, says that a chola who needs to eat, if there's an expert doctor who says that if they don't eat, it's going to get worse, then we feed him as well. Now, it's not simply that if someone's sick, then their life-threatening situation, then you could feed them. It's even preventive, meaning even if we say that if you don't eat, then you're going to be in danger. We also feed the person under those circumstances, right? So, and he says even if the person doesn't say it's possible, the language of Mr. Brewer, I only have in Hebrew, sorry, says even if the doctor says efshar sheyichbar alav hacholi, even if he says if we don't feed him, it's possible, it's reasonable to assume that if he doesn't eat, he will get potentially dangerously ill. We're very lenient, or we're very strict on pikuach nefesh. We're very lenient on fasting when we're dealing with health considerations. So it's clear that someone who has anorexia, they must eat on Yom Kippur if they are a chola sheyesh bo sakana, if they're a life-threatening situation, or if it can lead to chola sheyesh bo sakana. Now, I will tell you that in this book, he quotes something that Rav Zilberstein wrote, and I actually saw the comment. Rav Zilberstein, he's a posek in Eretz Yisrael, and in the Gemara in Yoma, I think Daf Pei Gimel and Aleph, he makes a comment that someone who's anorexia, you got to feed them, because you got to feed them, because they have a distorted sense that they could be in a dangerous situation. So he writes somewhere that feed them bishiurim, with certain amounts, which kind of sometimes defeats the purpose for someone who has anorexia, potentially. So even though he wrote that, he did write that, and then he apparently wrote something else in a different place, and he was asked about it, and said it depends on what the doctor says. I just want to share with you, bottom line, in source 12, what he writes, Rav Yoni Ronsak writes on page, in his Sefer, he says, the halachic status of someone with anorexia, the official term is anorexia nervosa, depends upon their current condition. If they have starved themselves to the point that their weight is dangerously low, they are like a physical chola sheishbo sakara. Okay? So they're not allowed to fast, nor may they eat using shiurim. They must eat and drink according to the precise instruction of their doctor. I remember the first time that someone asked me about this question, I didn't know, much about the medicine. I knew about anorexia. I didn't know the extent. And I remember calling Rabbi Willig about this particular case. Like, absolutely. Like, it wasn't even a question. He wasn't, like, asking a question. If someone is diagnosed as that, absolutely. Like, this is...
Absolutely what?
Absolutely, they can eat without shiurim, without any questions.
The doctor...
No, it's not. That's not necessarily true. Sometimes, it's a good question. Sometimes, it's... Okay. There are Orthodox Jews. There are Jews who follow halacha that sometimes they're looking for leniencies all the time. But believe it or not, there are Orthodox Jews who, when you tell them don't follow the halacha, they really want to follow the halacha, or what they think the halacha is. In other words, you have people who, let's say they've been diagnosed. They're not fit, are they starving themselves? They've diagnosed, they have anorexia, they're being treated for it, they're in the concept of being treated. They want to wait 6 hours to eat meat and milk. But you know what? But they love ice cream. So maybe every time they have ice cream, they should feed them. Or let's say it's coming up, they've been diagnosed as having anorexia, but they want to fast. Because they want to follow the halacha. They feel bad that they can't follow the halacha. So I'm saying sometimes... They're not officially starving themselves. Maybe they are, or they are undergoing certain treatments. But sometimes they want to fast on Yom Kippur, and part of the treatment is that they shouldn't. You see what I'm saying? So let me go over this again. So obviously, if they've starved themselves, so they're not allowed to fast. They cannot eat versus shiurim. Whatever the doctor said, that's what they have to do. That's pretty straightforward. There, another scenario is, if they are out of immediate physical danger and in treatment at an institution or at home, but with regular meetings, part of which entails getting them on an eating regimen to prevent a relapse, they are still not allowed to fast, nor may they eat using shiurim. That's this case. In other words, not where they're in a dangerous situation where there's a concern of a relapse. Since they are not fully stable, and this deadly illness is still very much in evidence, they must eat or drink according to the medical guidance of the doctor. Whatever the doctor says. In other words, whether they are currently in danger, whether they are not in immediate physical danger, but they have this eating regimen for X how long, and they're still under observation by the doctor. Now you have the third category, which is if they are fully stable, can go about their daily activities outside of an institutional setting, without treatment or close supervision, so then maybe it depends. Someone whose anorexia was caught early before any real harm was done, so let's see what the doctor says. Someone who has recovered through treatment and is fully stable should fast so long as the mental health professional believes they're able to fast. So they themselves are confident that fasting will not cause a relapse. The bottom line is, like the doctor, reasonable doctor says they should fast, and obviously they should not fast. They have to follow exactly what the doctor says. So this line of with shiurim doesn't seem to be something that we follow. Let me finish what he writes. Someone who has recovered through treatment but is not fully stable may not fast at all on Yom Kippur. If either the mental health professional with whom they are in contact believes that they should not fast because of a possible relapse, or they themselves believe that it might cause a relapse, and because there's a risk of a developing instability. There seems to be, he writes in his book, there seems to be a dispute between poskim about how someone with anorexia should eat or drink. Some say they should use shiurim, while others say that they should eat normally, unless their doctor says there's no danger in using shiurim. When a life is at risk, we are lenient. And he says, he writes in his footnote, aside from this halachic rule, it bears reiterating that every doctor consulted for this book agreed that one should not instruct someone with anorexia to eat or drink using shiurim. Not only does it not make sense for them, but even worse, the posuk trying to be lenient can end up doing more harm than good this way. Because the goal is that, right, what's anorexia? Someone doesn't want to eat so much. So if they say eat using shiurim small amounts, so that's, it doesn't help their cause sometimes. Sometimes the doctor will tell them, you got to eat a certain amount. So eating shiurim actually could be very harmful towards the treatment. So the bottom line is, if you look, right, so you do have this one comment, hard to know sometimes, you know, when this, in what context this comment was said. But so there is a comment by Rav Zilberstein who talks about it with shiurim, but then afterwards he said, it depends what the doctor says. So the bottom line is, that when it comes to eating disorders, if anyone, you know, whatever the doctor recommends, because even this time shiurim could be dangerous to the person. Okay? Okay. Last small piece is, what about institutionalization at a non-kosher facility? So as I mentioned to you, that the Mishnah Berura, source 13 is the Shulchan Aruch, in Or HaChaim, Siman Shin Mem Gimel Sif Aleph, who says that a child can eat, a young child, if he eats non-kosher, okay? So a Beis Din is not obligated to separate him, but his father should try to stop him. From an Isser Doraisa, Ulachilo biyadayim asur afil dvarm shasur midivre sofrim. You're not allowed to feed even food that is rabbinically forbidden. Okay? And we have a bunch of sources that we saw in source 8 above. You're not allowed to feed a child food that is even rabbinically forbidden. Yeah? Okay, so that's different. Okay, good. So the question is, so obviously, whatever we're doing, pikuach nefesh, that's an easy one, right? Someone's going to die unless he eats non-kosher food. You give him the non-kosher food. That's an easy one. Okay. The more complicated question is, let's say the child, we want to send him to a mental institution, because he's dealing with some mental health issue. It's not going to die, but we want to cure or try to treat his mental health condition. And the best, the most qualified one, that's a question, only the best that could be, is one where he will have to eat non-kosher food. Now, nowadays we have shipping everywhere, maybe. So maybe you could solve the problem. But it's an interesting question. How do we look at pikuach nefesh? That's easy. It's not easy. A difficult case. But if the only way to a person is deathly ill, and we'll get to it. Like, let's say to send the child to, let's say it's a certain type of mental health condition, like that it's addiction, right? Drug addiction. So I think there you could easily make an argument that if we feel that the one that he needs is one that's serving non-kosher, obviously try to ship him non-kosher food, but pikuach nefesh, save his life, you know, everyone would say that's fine. What about something again? Yeah?
Well, even if it's now pikuach nefesh, even if it is a case where you send the patient to an institution,
yeah,
so that he can be treated and he can get better a little bit,
yeah. Okay, so Yehuda's arguing there's, so the interesting question is, why are you allowed to violate Shabbat to save someone's life? So either you could say, there's a pasuk which says, v'chai bohem, that the purpose of the Torah is to live by the mitzvah, not to die for them. So, right, if you're gonna die by having to observe a mitzvah, you could violate the Aveira, but if you're gonna have to fill some mitzvah, you're gonna die for it, you could violate that so you can live. Now again, there are exceptions, okay? There are exceptions. But that's what that principle means. There's another, what you're alluding to is something called, the Gemara says, Chalel Shabbos Achas, violate one Shabbos so that you can keep many Shabbatot. Right? In other words, violate this one Shabbos. God forbid someone's going to die. Violate this one Shabbos to save the person so he can keep many Shabbos in the future. Now, the interesting thing about that perspective is that would say, even if we're not dealing with life, the first approach, v'chai behem lo shimus behem, so that's only to save someone who's going to die. So he's not going to die, he's going to live. But if someone is living a less quality to a better quality of life, so maybe you can't violate Shabbos so they'll have a better quality of life. The second approach is saying that maybe we'll extend, do we extend it beyond someone who's going to die? Maybe you could say, if someone, you're going to say like this, if someone who is not obligated in mitzvos, can you violate one Shabbos? Can you violate one Aveiro or two Aveiros or a certain number of Aveiros? Right now, this person is not chayv in mitzvos. Let's say this person does not have mental capacity, so he's exempt from all mitzvos. Right? He's lacking mental capacity. But maybe with treatment, he'll be chayv in mitzvos. So can you take the long view, violate something now so that he can keep more later? Do we apply this rationale for saving a life to a situation? That's what you're saying, right? Okay, so let's see. So the Chassam Sofer in Source 14, this is like when people study this topic, this is like the foundational tshuva. Chassam Sofer lived in the 19th century in Pressburg, okay? He fought back against the Reform movement. And Chelek Aleph, Or Chaim Simon Pei Gimel, he wants to say, that Bahad Salkina de la Rova Poskim Mashma Pshitus seems obvious, according to most Poskim. Divameshimamido Eitzel Nachrim Eno Kamachilo Biadai. So he makes a technical argument. He says, you're not allowed to feed someone non kosher food. When you send someone to a mental institution, are you feeding them non kosher food? Are you actually feeding them non kosher food? So we can depend. What does it mean? You have to put it actually in their mouth. You have to give them the fork, or maybe put the food in front of them. Like what? How do you define feeding them? Okay, we can ask that question. But he says, right. So he says that's. But that's not even machil b'yadayim. He's saying v'chein. He cites the Rabbi Yerucham. He says Ella, and he wants to say that. But maybe each person needs to be a little bit sick. But he says bistama. He says ein limchos. If you look at the English, right, about five lines down, one need not protest. He says, he cites the Ramah. He says, it's a different Ramah. It's a Rishon in the Ramah. He says, Ein, not the Ashkenazi Ramah, Ein limchos begoyos hamachilos oso nevelos. We don't protest against non-Jewish women feeding someone who's not well, non-kosher food. Aval, Ein lomar lagoy lachilo davar iser. So he said the following. He said, you can't protest, let's say, non-Jewish women who are feeding someone non-kosher food. You can't tell them, feed him non-kosher food. That might be direct. So what, you know, what's facilitating, what's not facilitating. So he's dealing with this technical question. V'hocha nami b'nil n'chil f'neina ein lomar davar ela shemaskir l'fruasa. You're not telling the institution, feed him non-kosher food. In fact, you would be happy if they would serve kosher food. What are you doing? You're setting him there. You want them to heal him. Maskiro lerafoso, lozono to nourish them. V'meshir to however they decide to do that. V'havale kamami to eats on the velo. It's as if you are placing a non-kosher food by them. O kenosein. Or kenosein. Was it Okinosein Erev Shabbos Im Chashecha? You're giving him, you know, food. But even though Abi Shavali Lech B'Shabbos, or you're giving him something you know for sure he's going to carry afterwards. So he starts off and he says that it is permitted, right? It's permitted. It shouldn't be usher to feed the person non-kosher food. The problem is, though, then he says, "Though wait a second." He says, however, this is why I think, according to technical law, when you send someone to an institution, you're not violating feeding them non-kosher food. You're hiring them to treat the person, and you're not saying feed them non-kosher food. You don't want to feed them non-kosher food. However, he says, "Umikomakom heidu kadmanenu zal shayidei machos asurus benaros metamtim halev umolo tevara." But they say that that by feeding him non-kosher food, then you are making his heart impure and you're giving him a bad... Sorry, hold on one second. So he says you are making his soul impure. This notion about feeding people non-kosher food, there's something impure about it. And then he writes very powerfully, Adayani Omer, Mutav Shu Shota Kol Yomav. Wow. Better that he become a Shota, I apologize. Hold on a second. Better that he become a Shota all of his days. Right, that's right. Very, very, very sharp, very harif, very troubling. Yes, very troubling. You can be troubled by it. I'm troubled by it too. Okay. So, Ramosha Sternbach, but it's not the end of the world. So, again, so step one is that technically it shouldn't be a problem. But we don't like the idea of feeding, creating a situation that you're making a soul impure. Don't worry, because, I mean, you can worry if you want, but Ramosha Sternbach from the Edei Charedus, he says, not so fast. He says here, yeah, I know what the Chassam Sofer said, but he didn't really mean it in our case. In Tshuva Zahos, Krach Aleph, Simon, Tav Pei Gimel, he says, yeah, I saw that he includes, he said it's permitted, but he Rak Messiah, he concludes and he says, better that he be a fool all his life, Velo Yatamtem, be a fool, be mentally incompetent, Velo Yatamtem Atsum Machosurs, and not make his soul impure with forbidden foods.
What would he do in the situation where the person is not going to be incompetent all his life, but he could be cured? Would it say better not to feed him?
That's what it seems. But let me read a little more, because he thinks that it's not as sharp as the Chassam Sofer made it out to be. He said the Chassam, he said in the Sefer Shevet Sofer, I think it's a relative. So he says the Chassam Sofer lo mayri b'shota gamur patri mitzvos. Ela kishenu kol adam. I want to say it's not someone who is so extreme shota. He meant aval shota gamur. He meant that someone who is. It's not like a normal person. He has certain issues, but it's not so extreme. He thinks that the Chassam Sofer's case was not that the person was so extreme. I don't know exactly the case, but the Rav Moshe Sternbach thinks that it's not a case where someone is so like mentally incompetent, so much so they'd be such a mental state that you potter from all mitzvos. But if someone, if you believe you could treat the person, be chayv mitzvos, it would certainly be permitted. And he cites the tshuva, the Beis Yitzchak, which is what Yehuda, what you want to argue, mevi din chalel Shabbos achas kedei sheyishmo Shabbosos harbe. And because of this law, violate one Shabbos, so you can observe many Shabbosos, the mutter la hachil shote machos asuros kedei sheyisrape v'yuchal l'kai mitzvos Hashem. That you're allowed to feed someone who is mentally incompetent, forbidden food, so that he can be healed and he can fulfill the mitzvos of Hashem. He cites this base mayor who says this as well, that you could be mechal Shabbos and pikuach nefesh based on chalal Shabbos. But the Mishnah Berurah, even the Mishnah Berurah says that the permissibility to heal someone is not only based on pikuach nefesh; it's also based on the rationale of chalal Shabbos achas. And therefore, and violate one Shabbat, so therefore, you would be permitted, using this argument, with a shota, to feed a shota, macholos asuros, so in order so that he could be obligated in mitzvos. And he also says that, by the way, someone who's a shota, someone who's lacking mental capacity, could be in a dangerous situation. You have to, you know, anyone who's lacking mental capacity, if you don't cure him, he might be in a compromised situation. So we do use this argument to be lenient. And in fact, Rav Asher Weiss is lenient, Rav Yashiv is lenient, and then he goes on to say, if you go to the last paragraph here, turn the page. He said, it depends on the state of the shotel. It's meaning the English, right? If he understands nothing at all and loses what is given to him, such that he is exempt from all mitzvos, it is permitted to feed him forbidden foods in order to heal him. When there's no kosher food available, it's impossible to bring kosher food. But if he is merely naive or a type of incompetence where he is not exempt from all mitzvos, it is not advisable to feed him forbidden foods, even if medical treatment will enable to fill mitzvos properly. So where you draw the line is an interesting question. In this case, according to the reason of Chassam Sofer, it's preferable that he remain mentally impaired all his life rather than transgress the prohibition before God. So everyone would agree, if someone is in a state where he'd be exempt from all mitzvos, and you believe a treatment could cure him, to transform to be chayv in mitzvos, to that state, so then you would be allowed to feed him non-kosher food. The question, I think, and if you read in the Sefer, it says, l'chadchila, someone with a mental illness, regardless of its severity, should be provided kosher food. If someone has a status of shota and must eat forbidden food to get better, or has no choice but to be institutionalized at a facility that serves non-kosher food exclusively, they may eat non-kosher food until they recover. If someone does not quite meet the definition of a shota, but their mental illness is so severe that it completely compromises their daily functioning and will be irreversible without immediate treatment, or it can be considered safek pikuach nefesh, then close consultation with a mora hora and mental health professional may allow them to eat non-kosher food as well. So what this means is the following. Like I said initially, if someone has drug abuse, right? Someone has a drug addiction, alcohol addiction. So Rav Zilberstein was lenient in that case. Because someone has drug addiction, right? They're chayv in mitzvos. They're not. Someone has a drug addiction. They're mentally competent, but they have a drug addiction. They have, alcohol addiction. So there, it would seem that you should be allowed to, if the only facility would serve non-kosher food, it would seem to be permitted to send the person there, because that's safek pikuach nefesh. Interesting question is, like what he's raising at the very end, is what if you could treat a mental illness? They can't function properly. They're not functioning normally. But let's say it's not pikuach nefesh. If it is pikuach nefesh, you can argue that, then it's totally okay. What if the person can't function normally? So what's the halacha? If someone can't function normally, how do you view the person? So halachically, if someone is sick, physically or mentally, such that they cannot function normally, so they're a chole she'ein bo sakana. Okay? So you generally cannot violate Torah prohibitions for someone who's a chole she'ein bo sakana, right? You spoke on Friday night, it's about can someone use a CPAP machine? So if it's pikuach nefesh, even if it's not pikuach nefesh, just to put the mask on, so then, at worst case scenario, you could probably knock down the prohibition to an Issa Drabbanon. Now, there's what you're trying to overcome with the CPAP machine is only an Issa Drabbanon. Okay? You could look at a Pikuach Nefesh, but you're only dealing with an Issa Drabbanon. If you're dealing with putting someone in an institution, they're going to eat non-kosher food, so for a Chola She'ein Bo Sakana, they can't function normally, we want to help the person, so how do you get around it? So potentially, this is what some posts can talk about. I'll just tell you the analysis. That some posts can say that let's assume that without this treatment, then they can't function, they will not be able, they can't function a certain way. They won't be able to function normally. So maybe, Step one. If someone, there's pikuach nefesh, where their life's on the line, so then you can do whatever you need to save their life. If it's chole she'ein bo sakana, regular sickness, they're bedridden, they can't function normally, you can set aside rabbinic prohibitions. What if there's a concern of loss of limb? Loss of limb. Limb, leg, arm, whatever. So sometimes, very often, a loss of limb could turn into pikuach nefesh. So if the loss of limb, if you're not treated, could turn to pikuach nefesh, so then totally okay. What if loss of limb will not turn into pikuach nefesh? You're with me so far? I'll explain how it gets to our case. Loss of limb that will not result in pikuach nefesh. So there's a big machlokas Rishonim. Most Rishonim hold that you can't violate a Torah prohibition. You might, there's one Rishon, the Rebbeinu Tam says you can. Okay. So if you hold that for loss of limb, meaning it's irreversible, God forbid someone's going to lose an arm. God forbid someone lose an arm. For that, that's very serious. Will also allow you to set aside a Torah prohibition to keep your arm. Even if you know the person can totally be alive, it's not danger to them, but they're going to lose their arm. So, but maybe you can set aside a Torah prohibition to save the arm. The question is treating someone, and let's say someone cannot function, mental health issue, they can't function normally, and it's irreversible unless they're treated. And the only place to treat them is with non-kosher food. If the fact that they can't function normally, irreversibly, is that like missing a limb? And when God forbid, someone loses an arm, so they can't function in a normal way, and that's irreversible, unless they get whatever, they get a prosthesis. But they can't, right? They lose their arm, God forbid, they can't function normally, and it's irreversible. Do we assume that someone who, because of a mental health issue, they can't, if they're not treated, they will not be able to function normally at all? This is irreversible. Do we treat it as if it's sakonas aver, a danger of loss of limb? And can we follow Rabbeinu Tam, who holds in a loss of limb, you can set aside a Torah prohibition? So maybe you can use that argument to allow the person to go to a facility to treat that, and even if it's going to serve non-kosher food. That's up for debate. You got that up. Yeah, Alex.
It should be stricter than loss of limb, because loss of limb is just that limb. If the person can't function normally, that controls the whole body.
Right.
Yeah,
so again, what does that mean? If they lose some kind of function, it depends what it is. And let's assume they are mentally competent. Again, if they're not mentally... If they go from this, so let's see what we know, what we don't know here. Let's just summarize this last piece. So again, if they're being treated for something mental health wise, but it's pikuach nefesh, of course, if need be, you could serve them non-kosher food, right? You could go send them to the station for non-kosher food. If it's something where they're right now they're exempt from mitzvos because of lack of mental capacity, and we could treat them so they could have mental capacity, it would seem that the majority of poskim would say it's totally fine. Maybe even the Chassam Sofer wouldn't say that's a problem. That's what someone is saying. The question remains, if it's not a life and death situation, they have some mental capacity, but the treatment will allow them, and this could be very practical actually, will allow them to deal with some serious mental health issue. It's not life-threatening, but some serious mental health issue that prevents them from functioning normally. So that is an open question. That's an open question. And that depends on the post-sec and the mental health professional. Yeah?
I think that really depends on what you mean by the non-functioning limb.